Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's the year for mobile shopping. Online, sure, stores, yes, but now right there, anywhere, in the palm of your hand. Mobile sales counted for more than 30% of all online sales this past shopping weekend. The number is expected to just keep growing. Apps are getting better and better, more personal, with better deals. In August, Macy's announced it will close more, 100 more, of its stores by the end of 2017 to focus their attention online. This hour On Point, the next frontier of shopping and shopping culture. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How do you shop now for the holidays and beyond? What changes when so much gets bought online, maybe even from the palm of your hand? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Washington is Sarah Halzack, national retail reporter for The Washington Post. Sarah, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Colorado Springs, Colorado, is Christian Magoon, CEO of Amplify ETF, exchange-traded funds. They focus on online retailers investing there. Christian, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So, Sarah, what does it matter if there's a lot more mobile buying going on? We've already know there's a lot more online buying going on. When it goes mobile, what's the difference?
Sure. So it just sort of changes the dynamics of where retailers have to address their customers. So on the one hand, this is a really good sign that mobile shopping is picking up the way it is, because think about how much time we all spend with our face buried in our smartphones. If retailers are connecting with their shoppers where they already are, that's good news. But one of the challenges is that conversion tends to be very low on a smartphone. And what conversion is it's retail speak for when you go from browsing to buying, when you just put, instead of just putting the item in your digital shopping cart, you actually click buy. And what we see is on phones over the holiday weekend, conversion was 2.8%. That's significantly lower than the 5.1% on tablets and the 6.3% on desktop. So that's the challenge that this mobile migration presents to retailers.
How do you read that, Christian? Is that a roadblock to the expansion of the digital wing of shopping, which has grown so enormous in this country? Or are people just still getting used to shopping on the little screen in your hand?
Yeah, I think it's just a kind of an evolution that people are getting used to doing things on mobile. There's research that shows that the larger the screen size you have in front of you, the more likely you are to buy, and the more you're more likely to actually buy in terms of dollar amount. So I think mobile is still kind of working its way into the ethos of shopping. Many people just looking to check prices when they're in stores, and I think we'll continue to see that that conversion rate grow here as we get more and more used to doing a transaction even on our smartwatch.
I see more and more of that, of people in the aisles, in the stores, but with the smartphone in their hand, checking prices, checking options. Sarah, who is now shopping where and how? How does it break down? Is it by age? Is it by geography? Who's shopping in the stores the old-fashioned way, armload of stuff to the checkout counter? Who's doing it on the PC at home? Who's doing it mobile?
So I think we really see a broad cross-section here. So I think, for example, it's a common stereotype that millennials only online shop, and that's not quite right. You know, we saw, for example, over the weekend that 8 out of 10 millennials shopped, and 56% of them were in store, and 62% of them were online. So clearly there were some there that did both. But you can see that this migration to mobile really does cut across all generations and all demographics, and so retailers have to figure out how to court their shopper in both of those channels.
Is it a big deal, Christian? I mean, I'm looking here, 8%, something like 8% of sales online now. That's still really not a big, a huge portion of all the sales in this country. It can feel that way sometimes with everybody. It sounds like they're ordering. You see packages on people's doorsteps all over the place. But 8%, has it really changed the world?
Yeah, that's a good point, Tom. It's still really in the early innings in terms of market share. We've seen research to suggest that it would go to maybe 50% of all sales in the U.S. would be online by 2030, but we're still in the early days here. 8% isn't a lot. Anecdotally, as you mentioned, when you talk to various people, maybe at Thanksgiving, many people are doing online shopping, but when you calculate all online retail sales, it's really not even 10% yet. So there's a real, I think, growth opportunity from an investment standpoint, but also for companies that are just kind of getting up to speed in the online retail area, these traditional brick and mortar companies, it's not too late for them to get into kind of the mainstreaming of online retail.
So what does that mean is still to come? I mean, headlines again this year about online shopping beating out Black Friday shopping in the stores, Cyber Monday versus Black Friday and all that. But if it's going to 50%, if some people say, I don't know if that's wide acceptance of that as a projection, but if it does, what does that mean for the world of retailing, Christian?
Well, I think that traditional retailers have to really revise their strategy to make sure that they have a very compelling online offering. I think that's why we're seeing companies like even Walmart go out and acquire Jet.com, kind of an Amazon competitor. Instead of trying to build it on their own, they're going to a group that has expertise, actually has a background and roots in Amazon, as a matter of fact. So these brick-and-mortar companies are being threatened. It's really a disruptive event to traditional retailers. This is a technology business now, and traditional retailers may have a lot of legacy issues that aren't as technologically friendly. For example, millennials who are technology workers probably don't want to go work for a big box department store. So this is a challenge that this industry is going to have to face. And we're already seeing some signs with companies like Walmart trying to adjust their strategy.
And the country kind of in flux around it here. Here's an interview, CBS News, and last week's shopper Pat Courtney describing how his shopping habits have changed.
We used to get up every morning at Black Friday, 3 in the morning, go everywhere. These days, you get up on Thanksgiving, order online, and we come out just out of habit, really.
Coming out just out of habit. Sarah, describe this moment, sort of in the culture around retail and retail shopping. It's a big part of many Americans' lives, and you can feel it in so much flux. This is not new, but it keeps moving. Stores by no means dead. They're out there. Watch. I mean, many of them full over recent days, but you've got fundamental things that are moving here, and there's one shopper just out there out of habit, and I don't know if he buys from the checkout counter or from the palm of his hand.
Yeah, and I think that shopper is symbolic of a lot of the shoppers that I encountered when I was out on Thanksgiving and Black Friday interviewing people. There still is a significant contingent of shoppers that simply likes the experience of getting out of the house. I would say that the vast majority of people I interviewed over the weekend were not out shopping alone. They were with their family. They were with a friend. They were with their children. And so for some people, shopping is social and experiential. They want to try things out. They want to try clothes on. And so retailers now have this renewed challenge of having to continue to court that shopper who wants the experience and then continue to court the convenience-oriented shopper who wants online. And so how they sort of balance those two imperatives that are before them and continue to deliver a good customer experience to both is sort of the central challenge of the era.
What do the numbers look like for the numbers going now online to shop, the numbers going to stores to shop, Sarah?
Sure. So what we saw over the weekend was that 108 million people shopped online, and that was up from 103 million the year before. We saw the opposite trend going in stores. So 99 million people shopped in stores compared to 101 million people the year before. And also, it's important to keep in mind that there's probably a lot of overlap between those two groups. That's something that we see all throughout the year. In retail jargon, they call this the omni-channel shopper. This is someone who ping-pongs back and forth between online and in-store shopping. And amid those two groups, there are a lot of people who probably did both.
All of the above for lots of shoppers these days. Let's take a couple of calls here. Susan in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for calling, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment that I'm rather surprised that only 8% of people are doing online shopping. I personally was a very early adopter of online shopping because of both the convenience and the ability to comparison shop. And in fact, there was a New York Times article in the technology section probably a week ago that even featured all of the ways in which, and this is relatively new, the ways in which one can comparison shop. Now, obviously for some things like clothing, until you have purchased the item, you can't really repurchase it online unless the retailer has very advantageous return policies.
Yeah.
But I don't find I'm a little too old, I guess, to be terribly interested in shopping on my smartphone, even though it's a large one. I do shop online a lot, and I personally don't like crowds, and I'm surprised that more people don't do it.
Just too convenient to pass up, even if there may be some restrictions to it. I mean, what about it, Christian? Is it convenience that drives people? Is it just the habit of living digitally rather than living, in the mall that makes the difference?
Yeah, well, I think there's probably three reasons, and they are competitive pricing that we just kind of heard about, the unparalleled selection. That you can look at a lot of items. Inventory is almost always there. And then that convenience factor, being able to have, very quick shipping. In some cases, we're going to see deliveries that happen within a two-hour period, for example, with some maybe Amazon-type transactions. So I think these are all coming together at one single point in time. And in terms of the 8% of all retail sales in the U.S., that's a U.S. Commerce Department number, and they publish it once a quarter. I think it's 8.4%. And one of the areas that hasn't been disrupted is groceries, and that is a big area thus far that hasn't really had a lot of online retail impact. So there's a few categories that maybe you don't think of when it comes to retail sales that lift that number or keep that number down, at least currently.
Two-hour delivery, did you say, Christian? How does that work? I order toothpaste, and within 2 hours, it's at my door?
Yeah, it's going to be some of the online retail groups. Amazon is probably the pioneer. Will be starting to set up some brick-and-mortar locations, maybe where they sell items, but also where they'll have some lockers and some points of delivery. So in large cities, you may be able to get, Tom, your noise-canceling headphones in a two-hour window if you're willing to pay for it with certain online retailers.
I've heard anticipation in recent days, even of when the self-driving cars and trucks finally come, Amazon may put products in them already out on the road, so they'll just be cruising, waiting for the order to come in, bing, to your door. Never mind the drones. There's one day, and maybe not too long from now, the self-driving car after that order you make digitally. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about digital shopping, now mobile shopping, still remaking the retail world and more. How the Buy Now button is changing the way we buy and sell. Sarah Halzack is with us. She's national retail reporter for The Washington Post. You can link to her pieces at onpointradio.org. Christian Magoon is with us from Colorado Springs, Colorado. He's CEO of Amplify ETF, exchange-traded funds there, investing in a lot of online sales. Of course, mobile is the big story this year. More people doing it on that small screen. Conversion rate, that is, checking it out to buying, lower there, but lots more people actually doing it, going there to buy right out of the palm of their hand. You can join us this hour. How are you buying this holiday season? With your 10,000 steps at the mall or with your handheld? And how has online shopping changed the way you get it done? Does it make you more impulsive, more disciplined, more sale-driven? Do you shop at the store with your smartphone in your hand, price checking, ordering online while you feel the fabric there in the store? 8% of all sales now online, and the expectation that that will go much further. Here's a couple of shoppers, one who still likes to do it the old-fashioned way, talking over the Thanksgiving weekend.
I really enjoy shopping, so I think it's fun for me to go out and pick things out, and sometimes things will jump out at you that I wouldn't have found online.
But another on Black Friday talking with Al Jazeera English about why he wants to do it online.
I just don't like all the hectic, shopping at the mall or just shopping in general.
And many do, and the packages flowing all over the country from that online ordering. Lindsay's calling from Tullahoma, Tennessee. Lindsay, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
I'm a mail carrier, and if every store is going to be online, how are we going to be able to deliver it all? We don't have manpower. We had so many packages from Amazon, which has a contract with the U.S. Postal Service. We had all of our Black Friday and all of our Cyber Monday stuff yesterday, to the point where we couldn't hardly deliver it all. We didn't have the manpower. And if every store is going to go online, I just don't see how it's going
to
happen.
Kind of choking on it. What happens to it, Lindsay? If it's all pouring into your post office, there's only so much room there. I mean, what happens when it stacks up ready to go out?
Well, I mean, city carriers have a city vehicle. Rural carriers have their own vehicle where we have to maintain it. And we make multiple trips. We call people in. We do everything we can. I mean, we've had to call in all of our reinforcements, all of our substitutes just to pull the mail. And I mean, we've got mail on top of it just to do packages. I just don't see how it's going to happen.
There's so many carriers, though, with, you know, UPS and DHL and Federal Express, FedEx. I guess there's alternatives, Lindsay.
FedEx and UPS actually contract the U.S. Postal Service to run some of their packages as well. So we run theirs, too.
Gosh, it's amazing to think of how it's all landing at that. Are you cursing under your breath, Lindsay, sometime at this popularity of online shopping? Because it means a lot of big boxes to carry around.
I curse so much today. I'm glad I'm in my car and nobody else can hear me.
Listen, good luck with it, and I really appreciate your call. Sarah, what about that part of this? I mean, just getting the packages where they want to go, if Christian's right, and this could go from 8% of all sales to half of all sales, how in the heck do we get them to their destinations?
Yeah, Lindsay's absolutely right. We're going to need to get a lot more creative about our supply chains and how we move this stuff around. And that applies to both the big shippers and the retailers. So Amazon, for example, now has about 4,000 trucks of its own trucks on the road to support its network. And it's also leasing some planes now. Now, for the time being, those things are both only being used to ferry Amazon goods from one Amazon facility to another. But you can imagine a future where they're taking on much more of their own delivery and doing the whole end-to-end process themselves. For example, they also have a program now called Amazon Flex that functions much like Uber, where they have contract drivers who can take packages short distances. So we see a company like Amazon having these ambitions of doing more of its own package delivery on its own. And then we see the likes of FedEx and UPS, they're doing billions of dollars of investment in more planes, in better sortation capabilities, so they can handle this coming deluge of volume.
Of course, it's that last mile or 10 miles, Christian, that may make all the difference here. Do you see that as a choke point as more and more purchased products flow into a delivery system that's not infinite in its capacity?
That's right. It very well could be, Tom. And the big, at least the good news, is there's companies that are like Amazon that are very innovative and willing to invest in infrastructure and technology, and they're trying to get ahead of it. And that's why you see them experimenting with drones, talking about, as you did before, some of the autonomous vehicle type delivery. Also, they're kind of going maybe a little bit counterintuitive and looking at doing some brick and mortar locations to actually have a shorter kind of delivery route to some of these major points. So a lot of innovation that needs to happen. This is almost like the early days of the internet, where a lot of the infrastructure and the mobile device towers weren't available and needed to be built out. So I think we're going to see a big change. It represents, I think, a great investment opportunity as well.
I want to bring one more voice in here from Phoenix, Arizona. Tom Blischock joins us. He's Global Strategic Retail Advisor at Nielsen Holdings PLC, Chairman and CEO of the Dialogic Group. Tom Blischock, thanks very much for joining us from Arizona today.
Hi, Tom.
What do you see coming over the next, I don't know, decade?
I believe that digital technology overall has changed our shopping behaviors, and I'll add one word to that, irreversibly. And in fact, this is just the beginning. We're finding that, and I think that Christian said this earlier, that when you look at grocery retailing, for example, and I'll pick grocery for a second, probably 4% today, not quite going to 50% by 2025, but how about 20%? So one quarter of all the groceries you get delivered to your home get delivered on a replenishment model, automated replenishment model. And the biggest shift going forward will be that if we look forward 10 years, we'll find that the home will do the ordering for you.
The smart fridge or whatever it is that sees that you're down on the milk or down on the cheese and off goes the order.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's so very important is as we look at this changing digital shopper, it's very clear to us that across millennials, boomers, and seniors, the digital shopping model is, in fact, part of core daily living, and that's going to only get more and more pervasive.
What's driving toward the digital shopping, even the mobile shopping, and what's holding it back?
The idea of convenience, us all having some being time-starved, us wanting to find the best price. And what are the basic issues of things that are driving us to digital shopping is the fact that, you know, disposable income for many years has not risen. So, you know, we live in a world of selectionist and survivalist. Survivalist people struggling every single week, so every penny counts. And digital shopping with price transparency helps them drive that. What holds us back? I think the idea that there's still, in the world of retailing, there's a lot of fragmentation. Do I do digital? Do I do in-store? By the way, I don't think that stores go away. We don't think that stores go away. In fact, stores flourish. But as, again, I think it was Sarah talked about, different format, different structure.
If it's omni-channel shopping, as you say, Sarah, what's the role of the store? If people are shopping, you know, home on the PC, out and about on their handheld, and in stores, surely over time that changes the footprint of stores, even the function of stores.
Absolutely. I think it's a commonly held belief across the retail industry that many retailers are overstored. They have too many locations for an online era. Perhaps they are in three malls in a certain market. Maybe they only need to be in one, right? And the role of the store is going to change in that more and more it becomes about being a marketing vehicle, right? So this has long been true for flagship stores on, say, Fifth Avenue in New York. They're these big, sprawling locations. They always have the best merchandising and sometimes exclusive merchandise that you can't get in other stores. And what that's about is they don't care if those tourists on Fifth Avenue spend a dime. What they care about is developing a halo, a cachet around their brand, so that when you do go home and you fire up your tablet to shop, you think of that retailer. And I think we're going to see that mentality coming to malls across the country, that really what you want your store to be is just a place where people experience your brand, develop feel-good vibes about it, so that when they do go to shop online, they think of you.
I already get that feeling in some stores, some brands, that they're maybe even downsizing their retail face, and it's more like a display window than a full store. They may not even pretend to have the full supply in stock there, but you can see things, and then they're constantly saying, well, you can order it online. It's not here. You can order it online.
Yeah, I think that's right. A lot of them are doing expanded assortments that you can get online that you can't get in the store. And then you even have these innovative new models from the likes of Bonobos. So what their store, how their stores work is that you go in and they have one of each item in every size. So you can try it on and see how it looks on you, see if you like it. But you don't walk out of the store with a bag. You end up just placing the order online and they ship it to your house within 2 days. So it can be a very small store, very small footprint, because they don't have to carry a lot of inventory. And so I think you'll see a lot more experimentation with models like that going forward.
And what about some brands who just won't be able to afford or don't want to keep up their own footprint of brick and mortar anymore? I heard somewhere of J. Crew like moving into Nordstrom. Is that right?
Yeah, J. Crew is offering some of their assortment in Nordstrom now. And I think for them, that's more just about expanding their reach, right? I think especially in the online era, you want to have your merchandise available in as many places as possible. And I think this is also why you see a lot of retailers grappling with whether they should sell on Amazon, right? You had the CEO of Louis Vuitton saying, well, we'll never do that. Amazon doesn't feel luxury.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of other retailers, that's probably the most viable path forward for making sure their goods get in front of customers. And so I think that was the gamble that J. Crew was making with Nordstrom, was let's get our stuff in front of as many eyeballs as possible.
If somebody puts into the search box on Amazon the thing they want and you don't come up because you're not there, that's a sale I guess you won't have. Rich in Dillon, Colorado. Rich, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling to express my views that I find online shopping extremely inconvenient, and I try to avoid it at all costs, with very few exceptions.
Why, Rich? What's the catch point for you?
The biggest problems with it are, I've had a lot of problems with delivery, not showing up on time, and then also the wrong product or something not as I expected it. And it's really difficult to return things. My wife buys a lot of clothes online and things for our kids online. Just the other day, she bought 2 pairs of winter boots that she thought was a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw them somewhere else in a store. I said, well, just send the other ones back. And she said, well, we can't do that because it was part of a free shipping deal, and now we'll have to pay. to send it back, so it wasn't worth it, and we got stuck with the more expensive boots. That's one of many examples.
Well, I hear that one. I absolutely hear that one. I appreciate your call from Colorado there, Rich. I mean, Tom Blischak, I've got that same bugaboo about the returns. It's just if it doesn't work out, such a headache to me to put it back in a bag or a box and put the label on it and get it back to maybe even the post office. To me, that's a real bump in the road. Does that get any easier?
Well, it's actually gotten quite easy in many cases. One of the things that that the online retailers have pioneered and done a tremendous job on is reverse logistics, which is being able to get back to them. Look, we're in the early days of online retailing, and closer to the beginning than the end. We just did a bunch of work with consumers to ask them about their perspectives on the future of online retailing. It's clear to us that we're in an age of experimentation yet. Mm-hmm. We're not at a point where we're clearly complete. But you know, the issue is there's models to return to the warehouse, or models return to the store. A lot of experimentation. It will get easier.
How do you see people working with returns these days? Online shoppers or mobile shoppers? I mean, in a store, I can try on half a dozen pairs of shoes before I choose the one I want. At home, will I do that?
They're doing it already. We see people order four or five pairs of shoes or four or five dresses. They pick the one they want and send back the other four. And that's a common practice. Now, it may not be a common profitable practice, but it is a common practice. One of the things that's going to change, though, going forward, and again from the research we did, is that it's been clear to us that returns are an issue. However, with the innovations being developed in the mobile technologies, holography, sizing capabilities, greater degrees of product information, we're going to see a better selection process occur going forward.
Let's go to Dawn in Columbus, Ohio. Dawn, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I had just tuned in about 15 minutes ago, and so initially you guys were talking about the driving and the shipping, and I thought, that sounds great because that'll add so many more jobs, you know, and, you know, that's what America's all about right now, jobs.
Yep.
But now on the retail side of it, it seems like it will be taking retail positions away. So I just wonder how they foresee this affecting the job market.
Tom, let me bring that one to you. Where will the jobs be as more buying goes online? What happens to the profile of jobs in retail?
So they change, but they don't change as dramatically as you think. They change more to a service model versus a traditional checkout model or perhaps a traditional stocking model. Let me give you one specific example.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fair to say that if I go forward 5 years, I may find that the top 1,000 items I buy, and I'm going to pick grocery for an example here, are actually picked by a robot in the back of the room and seamlessly, and it's delivered to your car.
You mean picked as in picked off a shelf for delivery?
Picked off a shelf, put into a box so that it can be delivered to your car outside the back of the store. It's called click and collect.
That doesn't sound like a lot of jobs if it's robots running around giant warehouse.
However, what you're finding is the people that are currently doing that work in the stores are redirected to provide different levels of service. So although there is a model which suggests that there's less mundane or manual work, there's a lot more work being driven or being needed by the expert in the store. Remember, the model for going forward is easy, expert, and fair. The expertise has been lost in retail. We're going to see a resurgence of that.
You mean, so you're not saying they're going to go from the checkout counter to an 800 number kind of service. You mean they're going to become like shopping advisors in the physical locations?
We're already seeing that today, especially in the world of healthcare, inside some of the large pharmacy chains and some of the large food chains. In some of the clothing chains, we see clothing advisors. Now, their role is different than today. The expertise is different than today. And it's critical that when we look at the differentiation in bricks and mortar, that is the store going forward, it's about experiential retailing, not just stacking shelves.
What do you think that means, Sarah, in terms of numbers out there, in terms of retail employment? Any idea?
It's really hard to project, especially because the pace at which this change is going to take place is hard to project. But I think Tom makes some good points there. You know, for example, I spoke with Macy's executives earlier this year, and they talked about this experiment they are doing with IBM Watson technology, which is a very sophisticated computing program. And they're trying to make it so that they're piloting something in several of their stores where IBM Watson, if you power it up on your phone, can answer these very simple questions, such as, where's the kids section or where's the restroom? And the theory is, they say, this is not going to change how many people we employ in the store. What it is going to do is free up our employees to stop answering low-value questions like where's the bathroom, and instead really try to work on making a sale, you know? Try to help people figure out how a certain blouse would pair well with a pair of pants, to do this more sophisticated work that theoretically couldn't be farmed out to a robot or computer.
We'll see how that goes. I have a vision of lots of retail spaces with very few staff in them already. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
We're talking this hour about digital shopping, now mobile shopping, still remaking the retail world and more. How that buy now button is changing the way we buy and sell, in some ways, live. You can join us this hour. What's going to happen with stores? Will they get smaller, become delivery centers, disappear sometimes? Do you shop at the store already with your smartphone in your hand, price checking, ordering online while you feel the fabric right there? And retailers, how are you adjusting to everything for sale in the cloud all the time? Sarah Halzack's with us from the Washington Post, national retail reporter there. From Arizona, Phoenix, Tom Blishock joins us from Nielsen Holdings. And Christian Magoon is with us from Colorado Springs, Colorado at Amplify ETF. Here's the sound of Baruch Semtov, who covers fashion and lifestyle for New York's Fox 5, interviewed about the role mobile shopping has and will play in the retail industry.
Our phones are an extension of who we are. They're so personal.
They are.
So when done well, these companies are really able to tap into who we are, mm-hmm. what we want, our preferences, and really establish a relationship with the consumer.
Personal shopper may be right there in your hand. What about the big stores? Here's former JCPenney CEO. This is Alan Kestrom talking with CNBC earlier this year about the future of retail. He warned retail owners not to completely end their brick-and-mortar stores.
I believe that you should have the internet, but you cannot give up the bricks and mortar experience, because a customer has to come into the store and be excited. She has to see things that want to make her want to buy, or him make him want to buy. And I don't think you're doing that right now. I think you just see lots of clearances, no big trends going on in ready to wear.
800-423-8255. How are you getting it done this holiday season? Lexington, Kentucky, Dylan's calling. Hi, Dylan. You're on the air.
Hi, how's it going, Tom? I listen to your show every day as a FedEx driver here in Lexington.
Terrific. What's your experience there?
I have a few brief points. In a town where there's a lot of major distribution hubs, such as FedEx and UPS, and I'll also put Amazon into that category, okay. I noticed that this time of year, Black Friday up until the New Year, there's a massive influx of temporary work opportunities, particularly at Amazon. In fact, they push it around town, attempting to find people to work for them.
Yeah,
our workload at FedEx becomes almost unmanageable. And what I observe is that a lot of those temporary jobs are notwithstanding. After the new year, those people are back out of work, and many of them are puttering along until the next season when they will finally be able to have some work again.
Yeah, it's a long time between surges there. Hang in there with the volume of packages that you must have right this time of year, Dylan. Sarah Halzack, what about the distribution of shopping over the course of the year? Everybody talks about the holidays, talks about Black Friday and all the rest. Does online shopping, digital shopping change the distribution over the calendar or not?
I don't expect that it does. I think for most retailers, about 20% of their sales come during the holiday season. And I don't think we expect to see major changes to that. And I think Dylan's point is borne out by the data. So, for example, we get the holiday hiring numbers from all the different retailers, how many temporary workers they'll bring on for the season. And the likes of Macy's, Kohl's, they kept their numbers flat this year. You know how much Amazon is adding? 20%. A 20% larger workforce for the holiday season than they had last year. So that shows you where the growth is and shows you just how massive that influx of temporary workers is.
Christian Magoon in Colorado, we're hearing about brick-and-mortar stores who, as Sarah says, they're dealing with omni-channel shopping. I mean, if people have the handheld in their hand and they're in the store, what's the best way for stores, physical stores, to juggle this relationship with the consumer who's always digitally empowered, even if their feet are on the floor of the store itself?
Yeah, one of the ways to do it is maybe beacons. Beacons can alert an app, a store app, that a consumer is maybe going past a certain section and push out a coupon or some type of a sales deal to them to try to kind of capture that their attention, some of which will be maybe on their phones. It's very challenging, though, for these brick-and-mortar companies to kind of adapt to this kind of other world of online retail, and they have to use the technology. And once they have people in store, things like beacons, things like special flash sales could be very helpful. Just being responsive on devices, not just physically in the store, is going to be crucial.
Tom, does Amazon ultimately roll over them somehow? It's going to know so much about consumers, it doesn't have to pay for all that physical space?
No, I don't think so. I think that when you look at retailers today, smart retailers, they're using big data, they're using analytics to change the game with the shopper. We call it relevance-based marketing. And, you know, we're going to find that Amazon continues its juggernaut without question. However, we also will see a number of other retailers who actually differentiate. And they may differentiate by the unique products. We call them endless aisles, perhaps. They will differentiate by unique applications. It's a pretty interesting next few years. I'm going to call it competitive environment. I would like to go back to one point that Sarah made, if I could, please.
Yes.
I think that today, on this issue of leveling out the year, we're seeing, and I think Christian talked about this earlier, we are early in the cycle of grocery. So if the grocery market is, let's say in the United States, $400 to $500 billion, by 2025, we're going to ship to the home or ship to distribution centers, click and collect, about $120 billion. So we will see some leveling of packages, nowhere near the level of Christmas, but there will be a different stream going forward.
Just because you start adding food in there, and that's a constant.
Yeah.
Maria in Detroit. Maria, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
You're welcome. Hi, Tom. I'm calling from Detroit, as you know, and I have access to many, many brick-and-mortar stores. Mm-hmm. But the biggest value I find in shopping online is I purchase only what I need. If I need a wire whip because I'm noticing it's kind of going bad, or I need some new mascara, I go to my computer.
Yep.
I have it in 2 days on Amazon Prime, and I didn't buy anything else.
So it's a way of sort of reining in the, hey, I'm in the store, why don't I just buy everything I see?
Or this is on sale. What a good deal, but I didn't need it.
That's interesting. Sarah, what about shopping habits when it comes to, see and grab and buy? Is that lower online?
Yeah, so this has been talked about quite often, that this pattern is very common, that people are much more task-oriented when they shop online. And so there's talk about, is online shopping the end of the impulse buy, right? And so retailers are trying their darndest to fight that, as you might imagine. And so that's one of the reasons they're pushing concepts like buy online, pick up in store. So Kohl's, for example, has found that when people shop that way, where they don't have the order brought to their doorstep but come into the store to retrieve the thing they bought online, they end up having attachment spending of about 25%. So that means if they spent $100 on their online order, they end up buying $25 worth of stuff when they walk in the store. And so that's one of many reasons why retailers are trying to push that option to sort of bring that impulse buy back to online shopping.
Convenient pickup. And while you're here, here's a few more
spend
things.
Spend a little more money.
A little more money. Carla in Portland, Maine. Thank you for calling, Carla. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm 60 years old, mm-hmm. so maybe that's the difference. But I just find that shopping online can be very complicated. Sometimes my numbers go in, sometimes they don't. I get booted off when I use my iPad. And I just like the experience of going into a store, seeing what's there, trying it on, and leaving. It just seems so easy.
So easy. Tom Blishuk, how about it? Ease. I mean, is it generational? Who finds online easy and who finds it a snarl?
Well, let's start with millennials. These are our first digital natives, and the pre-millennials are even more of a digital native. Boomers and seniors are doing a lot of pre-shopping. So the primary activity on, at least what we found from our research, is that the primary activity for online shopping today is literally pre-shopping. Where can I buy it? Price transparency is a key issue. By the way, one of the greatest sources of product information is basically social media. We have seen that the product information by the manufacturers mm-hmm. is nowhere near as powerful as, do my friends like it? So ease of shopping is redefined by availability of product information, price transparency, availability, and ease of getting the product.
Lots of ways of describing ease. But, you know, everybody's had that experience of punching in all your information and then the whole order vanishes at the last second. Does that get better as we go down the road, Tom?
The answer is absolutely yes. Again, we're in the early days, lots of investments in applications, lots of choices, lots of trying to deal with what we consider to be a pretty dynamic environment, which is online retailing. So one of the challenges that retailers have today is, where do I place my technology bets? For years, they've been investing in POS. They've been investing in assortment systems.
Point of sale in the store.
Yeah, point of sale in the store. The issue now is they have to invest in engaging the shopper digitally. That's a different investment strategy.
Let's go to Ben in Quincy, Massachusetts. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had a quick question about tracking all this information. You have so many shoppers, and there's so many people, you know, measuring your clicks, and there's so many pervasive advertisements and like persistent, surveillance. Isn't it kind of creepy how it all kind of feeds into it, how these retailers will develop profiles and know everything about you before you even know you want to buy something?
Yes. Ben, I appreciate your call. Sarah, the creepy factor here that some may feel, and they certainly, Ben is certainly right, that a lot is being tracked. You're building a profile when you're shopping.
Yeah. And retailers are very aware of this. And that's why a lot of them have been easing very slowly into things like beacon technology, and why a lot of them are very careful when you first download their app to say, can we use your location services, that they don't just start doing it without your consent, because they know that really would introduce that creepy factor in a serious way. I think what retailers are counting on is that one day we'll think of this the same way that we think of Google Maps, right? So think about it. Every time you open Google Maps, you're telling them where you're located. Mm-hmm. And I think the trade-off that most consumers make there is they feel like the value they're getting out of doing that, of having an easy way to get where they're going, is worth the trade-off of giving up their location. And I think what retailers hope is that we'll adopt a similar mindset about shopping.
Gary in Nashville, Tennessee. Gary, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My point was a lot of people are working second and third shifts, so they don't have the opportunity to go to any store besides Walmart. And I think that's a major push here, at least here for me. I don't have the opportunity to go out and shop. But
you need 24-hour access, Gary.
Yeah, 24-hour access, ability to buy anything at any time.
Online certainly provides that. So have you gravitated there, Gary? Is that where you're doing it now?
I actually have. I've bought quite a few things. I go to auctions online also. I find the whole experience quite satisfying, really.
Yeah, I appreciate your call, Gary. I mean, I just end up wondering, Tom, if the whole idea of what shopping is changes over time, if there's a constant conversation with purveyors, with sellers, that, you know, they know you, they're trying to get you to know them in a more intimate way, do they become fixtures in people's lives, especially if they're on your mobile?
The answer is yes, and I'd like to go back and just answer one point at the gentleman that asked about the ease of access and so forth. Digital shopping has redefined patience. So we used to be on the phone waiting for 10 seconds or so, and we'd get frustrated. digital devices on a response time is 2.4 seconds. So if you're not responding with a page load in 2.4 seconds, people get pretty frustrated. So the issue here is that when you look at this engagement between retailers and consumers, there could be a point in time where the data that you have about you really resides on your cell phone or on your mobile phone more than it resides with the retailer. Security is going to change. A lot of focus as we get into mobile payments, a lot of focus on credit card security. So we've not seen the capabilities yet which give us, as a population, the security we want necessarily.
But here it comes. You say Martha in Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, Martha. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. I'm actually an owner of two stores, but I started, and a mail order business. I started originally as a mail order business.
Okay.
But I'm a very unique...
So you started all this, Martha. All this buying from a distance.
I did. No. No, I tell you, I actually go and talk to high school and college classes on entrepreneurship. And when I get to the high school kids, especially, I say, if you can buy anything locally, please do it. I want them to understand that a dollar going into their local economy means so, so much. And I think that one thing that gets my team frustrated is when someone walks into our store, to my employees, uses my inventory, uses my insurance, all my rent, and then takes a picture of it and walks out thinking that they're going to get it cheaper online.
Does it happen often, Martha? Does that happen often?
It does happen. I tell you, 4 years ago, I was ready to shut down both stores. I was so, put my arms up. But it's been getting better, and I think people are appreciating what we have. I'm a high-end store, so my product is not necessarily on Amazon. But the interesting thing to me is that 15 years ago, Walmart was the big devil moving in and taking small businesses. Now it's Amazon is making Walmart look like the angel.
And they don't even have to move in to do it. You say shop local, and a lot of people respond to that, particularly this time of year when they're looking for gifts. But I've also got Kathleen here in Milwaukee saying small business owner makes goat milk lotion and uses online shopping to buy the materials to make her product and then uses online shopping to sell her product. So I guess, Sarah, this can work in a lot of ways. You can strip the local retailers of their role, or you can buttress, artisans and give them a way to sell broadly.
Yeah, and I think a lot of retailers actually are trying to get in on that action right now. So we're in this moment where local food is kind of having a moment, craft beer is having a moment. Shoppers are really responding to things that feel small batch and unique. And so the big retailers are trying to get a little piece of that. And so you see the likes of West Elm is now in each city carrying a few artisanal goods made by people in that area. You see Nike is trying to decorate its stores with artwork from local photographers. They're trying to bring in some of these local guys into their business, and hopefully that's favorable for some of these small sellers.
The local impulse strong right there, even as that long arm of Amazon and more digital reaches right across the country. Sarah Halzack at The Washington Post, it's always good talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Christian Magoon at Amplify ETF in Colorado Springs. Thank you very much, Christian.
Thanks for having me.
And Tom Blischock at Nielsen Holdings in Phoenix, Arizona. Tom, thanks for your insights today.
Thanks, Tom.
Good luck shopping, everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.